The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 9th of March, 2020. And I'm looking at the FTSE right now, down 7.1%. And that's a bounce. It was down 8.8%. And at the moment, we are in bear market territory. And that's 20% from a recent high, of course. On the podcast today, I have Harvey Sinclair, Chief Executive Officer of E Energy Group. That's EAAS. And Harvey discusses the company model and their plans for growth. Also on the podcast, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about Shell, which he's had a little dabble with today. It's really gapped out. Of course, the Saudis ramping up the oil war with the Russians because the Russians wouldn't sign the OPEC deal. And oil has gapped down massively. Of course, producers and anyone associated with oil and gas has pretty much gapped down. He also talks about Open Orphan, ORPH, another good contract. A bit of news from Open Orphan. Hopefully we'll get Cahill on the podcast very soon. And we also talk about Eddie Stobart Logistics. Last week, we had a bit of a tussle on it. A lot of people saying I was rude to Alan, so I did apologise to Alan, you know, on WhatsApp, and we talked about it again today, and I'm still of the same thought. You know, a lot of people were rude to me on Twitter about my comments on ESL. I did check out their timelines. They were all ESL holders, and pretty much ignoring the fundamentals, in my mind anyway. So we talk about that. Also on the podcast, of course, I have two lists for you, the top five most liked RNSs and the top five most followed companies. You can see both these lists, in fact, the top 10 versions of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Are you tired of missing news about stock market companies you follow? The Vox Markets app helps investors stay ahead by making sure you never miss an important update. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Harvey Sinclair, Chief Executive Officer of E Energy Group. Ticker there is EAAS. Harvey, thanks for joining me.
Good morning.
Now, many people may not have heard of the company because obviously you've just listed on the stock market in January. So new to the thing, and a heck of a day today. But let's discuss. So first of all, for people not familiar with the company, just summarise what E Energy Group is all about, if you could, Harvey.
Sure. So E Energy is a new generation of energy services company. Our core business, which is E Light, is in the energy as a service sector. Mm-hmm. So at the moment, our core business provides capital-free lighting solutions, LED lighting retrofits for businesses and schools where the client pays no upfront cost. We cover the investment and the solution delivery. And then in exchange for that, we take a monthly fee for a 7-year contract. So we make our money through the savings, and the customer gets an energy reduction strategy on day one without having to deploy any investment. In addition to that, the group strategy is to have listed on AIM as a buy and build strategy to consolidate what we see as a very fragmented market in energy management, which is owning the meter and procurement, and the carbon reduction strategies for SMEs and schools.
Yeah. So all right. So, I was just going to say then, who's your target client there?
So we've done 1,000 projects to date over the last 6 years. Obviously, we listed in January, but we're an established private business prior to that. Previously, schools and education have always been a core market for us, and public sector is a sort of almost like a perfect storm for our business model because they're capital constrained, but they own and operate big, large buildings. Mm-hmm. And then commercial industrial, so everything from logistics all the way through to manufacturing and industrial.
Yeah. And how big is the market then, Harvey?
So the market in education is a billion sterling on its own, and the market in commercial industrial is about a £4 billion market just in the UK and Ireland. So when you consider that 80% of all buildings in the UK haven't moved to a form of energy efficient lighting, the opportunity is just enormous.
Yeah, absolutely. And take us through, how long has the business been going, and what level are you? What stage are you at in your development?
Sure. So, up until the listing, which was on the 9th of January, we were a privately owned company, the three main shareholders having funded it to date. We've been going since 2013 in Ireland and 2014 in the UK. We're currently now averaging €1 million a month in sales. which at the operating level will deliver us just under €1 million profitability on a sort of annualized basis. So we're trading on plan. We're seeing huge growth. Conversion rates of proposals are at 33%, which is, I think, a fantastic conversion rate for any B2B business offering.
Mm-hmm. I see, yeah. And what's the goal, the ambition here then, Harvey?
So the goal ultimately is to build and grow what we see as being going to be the number one energy services offering and company in the UK, and that means growing organically through energy as a service with bolt-on acquisitions to support the growth of Elight, so that we can become the leader in light as a service, and then build out 50 to 60 million enterprise value through the consolidation of a energy management services offering. The reason we like energy management, and there are a couple of well-known stocks, Inspired Energy is doing very well in the market. So there's a big arbitrage between private valuations and public valuations. But strategically, what's really exciting about energy management companies is these companies have a huge customer base where they own the relationship with the meter. And so that lends itself brilliantly for us to be able to mine those customers and transition them to energy as a service, where we make very attractive margins on much bigger deal values. And it gets us that full cycle of owning the meter, reducing companies and schools' energy costs, and then hopefully in 3 to 4 years' time, move into the on-site generation model where we're generating capital-free power solutions through solar and battery and EV charging. So our fundamental strategy is it should be profitable for companies and schools to become energy efficient, and it should not cost them their own capital. And ultimately, that is our strategy, deploying profitability through energy efficiency.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. And so as far as you're concerned, it's going all to plan at the moment?
It's above plan. We couldn't have wished for a better start to the year. I mean, one of the great things about being a public company is that it's helped us raise the profile with our customers. And customers see that public listing as an endorsement of accountability and transparency and good governance. And I think that's helping us close a higher degree of proposals because our schools see us as just that much more professional than anything else on the market.
Yeah. And what's your background then, Harvey? Where have you come from to be where you are today?
So I'm a proven sort of tech entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. I listed my first business on AIM in 2002, which was a company called The Hot Group. We had a very successful journey, which saw us consolidate the online recruitment sector. We did 9 acquisitions in 2.5 years, and then sold very successfully at a huge premium to the market in 2006 to Trinity Newspaper Group. I stayed on for a year. And then I started to invest in some technology businesses, got involved in some commercial property. So the sort of balance between understanding what was going on in the commercial property markets and investing in what was then a small little LED company, I immediately saw the opportunity where landlords and tenants were starting to get a lot of pressure on them to reduce costs and save energy. And then set up the Elight business back in 2013.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Sounds good. Okay, well, Harvey, every day on the podcast, I'll highlight the top 5 most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours to be on the list. People have to hit that follow button on your page. So give me 3 reasons why someone should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
I guess the first reason would be, look, we're an impact investment opportunity. We're a young, rapidly growing company in what is a huge market. We've got a fantastic group board. We've got the ex-chief executive of Philips Lighting. And I think 3, given that the market is so huge and that the growth opportunities and energy efficiency are so big, we're the only stock out there on AIM, really, that gives investors the opportunity to take advantage of that growth in the markets.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Hard to chat to you. And hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for listening.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You're Al.
I'm fine, Joss. Well, it's a nice sunny day, but it's not on the markets. It's a very
pouring. It's pouring on the markets. There's a storm. It's the worst of if we had to put a weather analogy in it, we're having a hurricane at the moment, and things are just collapsing. Do you know what? I mean, this day. I was looking at the FTSE. What's the UK? It was the FTSE 100 was down about 9% as I looked. Now that's 9%,
opened about 5.9, I think.
That's a crash, you know. It's 10% is a crash. I mean, that's big, and that compares with any of the big, sort of, you know, Black Monday and all that stuff, and the financial crash. That's up there in top five, you know, big fallers. It's a biggie, you know, and off the back of coronavirus fears, of course. The figures. I don't know if you saw the death rate. I tweet out a sort of chart every day, and the death rate yesterday, or the last set of reported figures, are 47% higher than its peak back in the mid sort of February, and so we're not seeing a slowdown yet, and that's the problem, I think. And I've said this, people are saying, should I start buying and buying? I said, well, fair enough, if you're in a good company, scale in, but I'm thinking we could go into a recession here. I did a video last night. I said, listen, this was signals pretty much late last summer. The yield curve flicked up saying we're going to have a recession. Whenever that happens, 18 months or so until it does happen. So, you know, we got this now coronavirus on top of that as a catalyst. But, I mean, I said, you've got time. And my thought was this. Until you see the number of patients reduce, have some patience, because we could go into a recession here, and it could go a lot lower. So scaling is fine, but be prepared to scale in over the next year, because we could see a low market for a year here. So it's no rush at all, I don't think, for anything, is it really? You know.
Well, no, I had a chat with an engineering friend of mine, actually, who went back in on the last crash about a week and a half ago and is now regretting it. And I said, well, the thing is, as you said before, it's all about scaling in. I think there you're going to get opportunities when the market falls like this. But I tweeted out this morning that there was something caught my eye, which Warren Buffett, of course, is sitting on billions of dollars at the moment, ready to invest into the market, because that's always his strategy. He buys when there's blood on the streets. Now, he's got a thing called the Buffett Indicator, which is the gross product of all the companies listed on the Dow Jones, set against the actual valuation of the Dow Jones at the time. And if the index is high, it shows that that there's a massive disparity between what the companies are turning over and producing in terms of revenues and profits versus the actual valuation on the market. And it's at an all-time high. The Buffett Indicator, it basically is saying that we could see up to a 50% correction. Coronavirus is the trigger for this, but I think it's an interesting article. You can Google it, or I put the link up on my tweet. But I think there will be opportunities coming up. In fact, I did pick up some Shell this morning. The last time I bought Royal Dutch Shell, which I'll talk about in a second, was back in, I think, 2013, and I picked it up at about 13-14 quid then, and just sat on it in my portfolio because the capital grew, but also the dividend yield is fantastic, and there's a dividend every quarter, rigorous clockwork, and that's the way you have to view this. But there are opportunities with some great funds as well. I think there are opportunities to scale in. So that big dip this morning, it's come back a bit. I expect it'll go down again this afternoon. So crikey, if I can get Shell below 12 quid, I'll be absolutely delighted, because there are some great companies out there now that really do offer great value, and there'll be short-term interruption in their earnings, but longer term they will get back on track.
It's a long-term game. The average pull down in a bear market is 23%. We're not there yet. We're not at the average, and it lasts for around about a year and a half. So I think top to trough. So there's plenty of time. You know, I mean, we've only been here for like a month or so. And that's not to say it'll go down for a year and a half. I mean, it bobs along the bottom before it starts recovering. You know, so But there's plenty of time. You know, people, I mean, people just think they have to dive in right now. Sometimes you get an oversold day where it will. And I said to people on the video yesterday, I said, listen, if you want to exit positions, today is not the day. The panic days are not the days, because bear market rallies are more aggressive than bull market rallies. Bull market rallies are gradual. I mean, they're quite nice. They just climb up gently. But bear market rallies can whipsaw about. And it's happening on the Dow last couple of days. We've seen, you know, 4-5% every day, pretty much. And so wait until there's a big up day, then sell then. Be selling to buyers, because that's why bear markets have got really hard to spot, because they can recover, they can happen, the upside, the rallies can happen for days, weeks, months, and people believe we're back into a bull market, and we're not. I think this is a bear market now, and even though we will rally, we may see the figures go down on coronavirus and everything. Oh, excellent, we're about to start rallying. I genuinely think the economy and global growth is going slower, so then we'll turn it down again. So I think those kind of rallies we'll see are time to sell, but not on big down days like this, because you're missing, like I said, most of the big up days happen within days or weeks of big down days. So just wait a little bit and then sell on up day, you know?
Well, I think I agree completely. And I think also you've got to look at coronavirus. This is a known unknown. I think in the first instance, we haven't had
exactly what I talked about in my video. Did you watch it last night?
I didn't know. No, I didn't, mate.
Risks. There's no...
I was recovering from a long weekend watching a gig up in London, so...
Okay, yeah. I talk about risk, where there's known risks and unknown risks. I said, you know, the known risks are things you can research for. I mean, you can look into a company's debt, you can look into a company's profits, you can look into where they're based, you can, look into all the stuff like that, basic things, you know, if they need cash or not. They are known risks. You know, that's part and parcel researching. You can avoid those and manipulate the odds in your favour. Unknown risks, like the coronavirus is coming. Now we know about it, but it's still an unknown to it. And that is the depth. We know there will be an economic impact. How deep will this impact be? And until we know, you know, there's no point going nuts. And like I said, have patience until the patience being scanned of reported cases goes down. We won't see that uncertainty removed. So there's still a lot of uncertainty here. How big is this going to get? We don't know. We don't know.
I think the thing is, we're now seeing cases in Italy. And, of course, we're getting accurate reporting from Italy and the other countries. But I don't think we ever had a clear picture from China in the first instance, because they are by nature secretive. So I think that's the unknown in all this. As you rightly say, once we see the daily death rates start to go down, then one can hope that it's under control. But, of course, we still have to find a vaccine for the virus. The virus could continue to mutate. There are all sorts of variables there. The one thing we do know is the quarter one earnings for all these major companies this year will be badly hit, and that's reflected in the fall. But there's a lag
we'll have. So we may get better, so, you know, reported cases on coronavirus go down, and then you have the corporate updates, which will be bad from companies. So again, there's that lag, you know, and can they recover, you know?
Well, there is, and of course the markets tend to sort of take a 9-month view, so we're looking at 9 months ahead. So we're looking sort of September, October time now at the end of the year. So that's where the market expects earnings to be at that point. But of course, if it is dealt with rapidly, and if we can sort of get a vaccine sorted, and the company we're going to talk about in a second are working on that, then we could see a quicker recovery. And it might just be quarter one earnings that are hit, but there is still the wider issue. I think that the US market is overvalued, and probably the FTSE was overvalued to a point too. But I think whatever way you look at it now, the FTSE 100 companies, FTSE 100 companies are now offering some serious value, particularly for income. So I think if you're going to scale into the market, there's an opportunity to scale in for income, and that could be funds, or it could be some of the key FTSE 100 stocks that, you know, like Shell. I did actually get in this morning. I sold everything a couple of weeks ago, but I bought some more Shell this morning, and I got it below 13 quid, so £12.92 a share. And if it goes back down there again or drops further, I'm going to buy in again, simply because it pays a chunky dividend every quarter. It's one of the largest oil companies in the world, and it's paid a dividend every year since the Second World War. So I think there's a real income opportunity here, and obviously with that comes a longer-term opportunity for capital gain too, and there are some great funds that also fall into that category.
I've got to say, I topped up in three funds I own. I topped up in three stocks as well that I believe in, that I just think of basically looking at their profits. You know, they're on less than a P of 10, so I just think, and they're growing very quickly. So I just think, you know, it's an opportunity here. But like I said, scaling in, I'm not going nuts. I got plenty of cash. I'm still at 44% cash in my portfolio. So, yeah, okay. Okay, yep. Stocks, what are you looking at, Al?
Okay, well, just following off from a vaccine for coronavirus, there was an article in the Sunday Times over the weekend about Open Orphan. And, of course, Open Orphan, as we know at the start of the year, acquired hVIVO and brought in Professor John Oxford, who is one of the hVIVO founders, as consultant going forward. John Oxford is a virologist. He's an expert in the field, and they've worked on vaccines for flu, for AIDS, and for the SARS virus in 2003. hVIVO also has a quarantine centre in Queen Mary's Hospital in London, and they have today announced that they've launched the world's first commercial human coronavirus challenge study called Controlled Human Infection Model, where they're going to use this use the quarantine facility human subjects will be given the opportunity to take mild forms of the virus, and they'll work on a vaccine there. I mean, it's a brave person that goes and does that, but hey, if you need the money, I guess you do. But it's a big step forward for the company, and indeed Open Orphan are one of the few companies that are actually in the blue this morning, and the shares have popped up on the news. But even so, there was another note published by Share Profits last week, the company is basically trading on its assets at the moment. It also landed another a contract that could be worth as much as 7 million euros over the next couple of years. Last week, there are other income streams coming from collaborations with major pharmaceutical companies such as Ipsen. The company is trading on 1x earnings, and the valuation of the company should be well in excess of where it is now. So I think it's an exciting time for Open Orphan and hVIVO, or the larger entity. And you know, I'm sure once we start to see some results coming from this challenge study, which can be used towards putting a vaccine together, then you know the kudos that comes with that will obviously be reflected in the valuation and the valuation of the company. But I know you've had Cal Friel on the podcast many times, and he comes back and provides regular updates on the progress of the company. But this is a big step forward for them. And as I say, if you saw a tweet yesterday, you'll have seen that they were also featured in the Sunday Times with the quarantine clinic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And hopefully Cal's coming on very soon. And like I said, you know, they did a nice contract, didn't they? Yes, it was on Friday. And I said, and then, you know, the stock market was selling off then. I said, you know, you're talking about a minimum here of around about 10 million a year or 7 million a year, a minimum. And I said, generally, you know, this would have shot up the share price on a normal day, but you've released this news into against the flow sort of traffic. And so it's really hard work. But I mean, yeah, definitely that, you know, Open Orphan are going in the right direction. But like I said, in this market, it's hard work, isn't it? So it's against the current, you know?
It's hard work. It's very much against the flow. But I think, you know, everyone knows Cal has a track record of developing companies, as he did with his last pharmaceutical venture. So and also he's been very open and frank and transparent, and he's invested into the company with his own money too, at the last fundraising, and indeed with the RTO with Venn Life Sciences last year. So I also own shares in the company now. I'll declare that position, and you know, I think they've got a great year in prospect. I really do.
Marvellous stuff. Open Orphan, what's next, Al?
Okay, so we talked about Shell. There are countless great opportunities to buy into income stocks at the moment, but I talked about this company last week, and it's a recovery opportunity as I see it. The logistics and haulage company Eddie Stobart, ESL. Eddie Stobart have a number of strings to their bow. There's also the other Stobart Group as well, which has nothing to do with Eddie Stobart Limited now. But they have a freight business, they have a pallet business, a logistics business, and a supply chain management business. Accounting issue last year, which impacted on the half year numbers. There was also an impairment charge as well, and the company said the underlying EBIT would be sort of 11.6 million loss versus a profit of 600,000 last time around. At that stage last year, Wincanton were also scheduled to make a bid for the company, and they declared that position. But as the process went through, the auditors were going through the accounts, so they weren't within the allocated period of time that they listed.
Well, I didn't read that. I read that they'd gone through it and that they had just not bid for the company.
I think they decided not to bid because they ran out of time. There was the debt issue, but then again, almost immediately afterwards, DBay Advisors came in and funded the company and basically scaled in with their investment into the company.
Listen, I got a lot of flack over this last week because I didn't let you speak, but I mean, I don't want to mislead people here. What I read, and I may be incorrect, but I mean, I don't see that there was a time issue. I think Wincanton had an extension. And it's taken two dealers. So it says here in order to enable access, they did have an extension of time, but they just didn't. There can be no certainty of offer. So they had an extension, didn't they? But they didn't actually enter into any offer.
Well, I think they decided not to make an offer. So I'm just going back now to the Stobart said it was unable to put forward an offer to shareholders despite being granted access to extensive due diligence commensurate with its status as a strategic competitor.
So that suggests to me they didn't offer the company because they didn't want to. Essentially, it didn't seem to them like a good business deal. So because otherwise, you know, that's it, isn't it? There was no other reason for it.
Well, I think the margins in the haulage business are pretty fine, and I think Wincanton have a good business, and Stobart at that point have. But of course, you have an accounting error, you have an issue, and the board has stated they don't expect those issues to be repeated going forward. And indeed, in the same announcement, when they announced that Wincanton wouldn't be proceeding, they also announced that DBA Advisors would be coming in and making an investment into the company, which they did. And of course, the shares were then suspended. They came back. Crashed down to 4.5p. They went up as high as 13-14p, I think, last week, and they're now about 8.5-9p. That gives it a valuation of around 25 to 30 million, and this is a company that is turning over, getting off for $1 billion a year. So, yeah. Profit margins have been impacted in the short term. They expect to make a small EBIT loss on the year, but given what's happened, I think unless there's a huge impact from coronavirus on their business, which, as we know, speaking to other logistics and transport companies like, for instance, Expediator. They've got a good business with a good structure. They haven't been impacted at all by Brexit. So going forward, they don't expect to see to be impacted too much. So I think the acid test, and obviously with this uncertainty over the accounts, will ESL be able to pull it around? I have bought shares in the company, so I've actually backed it with my own money, and I do think this company will come good. And I think there could be, you know, if we get back to even where the valuation is, where DBay scaled in, you know, we've still got that. There's still that. Was still
they didn't
offering.
Scale it. It was a loan they gave the company. It wasn't like I mean, there's a huge difference in offering a company a loan and an investing money or buying stock. I mean, you know, like I said, they're going to get a return on that if you know. ESL doesn't go through, of course. But so if you start up a business, Al, and I said, listen, I wouldn't mind getting involved, or you approach me and say, do you want to get me an investor? And I say, yeah, I'll put some money in for shares. That's a lot different from me saying, I'll offer you a loan. You've got to pay me interest on that of 18%.
Oh,
18%
sure.
Loan is not like, that doesn't say to me that they're hugely confident about the business. I know they're the biggest shareholder, but I mean, they basically give a loan. That's not the same as being a committed, you know, investor, is it? I mean, I know they've got shares as well, but they want to return that money, you know. So, and I just want to say, listen, I got a lot of flack. I got a lot of flack last week, mainly from people when I looked on Twitter. Many people have been, you know, offensive, and all of them were holding ESL shares. And this is my point. What I'm saying is this. Logistics is a very competitive field. The margins aren't very big. This company is indebted. They've 215 million net debt. So that's, you know, if you add the cash up, take away current borrowings and non-current borrowings, there's still 215 million in the hole there. So, you know, they're making a loss. They're highly indebted. Now, debt kills companies, especially in environments like we are now. It's happened to Flybe. Flybe have gone through. Now, they've had problems for a long time. You get things like coronavirus come along, and that's the catalyst for a whole lot of defaults and a whole lot. If we do have a business downturn, you know, ESL will suffer, and they also have to keep up their payments and debt. It's a highly risky strategy. And my point is this. There are plenty of companies out there that will become cheap over the next, well, some of them are already. And they're earning a profit, they're not making a loss, they're making a profit, they're generating cash. So my thought is this, you know, I talked about known risks and unknown risks. This is a known risk. You can avoid this if you want to. So I don't understand why people are punting it when there's safer plays out there with a good return. So to me, the risk-reward isn't there for me. I mean, I just think it's way too much risk, and that's all I'm trying to say. And I know I'm going to get into flack again because from the people who basically hold this because they have, you know, they have buyers, confirmation bias, and so they're just sitting there thinking, no. And they are not looking at the figures. I'm not lying. Just look at the figures. All I'm saying is of all the sort of positions you can take on the stock market, you know, 2,000 listed companies, this is probably a top 5%, the most risky. And I'm just thinking, and that doesn't equal the reward as well. This is the type of company we could wake up tomorrow or day after and it can go through and it will not be trading any further. And that's as simple as that. And I'm just saying, if you're happy with that kind of risk, it's fine. That's what I'm saying. But, you know, I don't see why anyone would want to play this when there's, you know, a lot better options and a lot more of them on the market. That's what I'm saying. Why not go for a business who's expanding, has no debt, their profit is growing, and I don't understand. Why not just go for a business like that? I don't understand.
Well, I think I think given the falls in the market this morning, there are a whole raft of opportunities have arisen to buy these wonderful, you know, long-established dividend-paying company, FTSE 100 stocks, you know, that in some cases are paying sort of with the depreciation in the share price and the falls this morning. They're paying, the dividends must be sort of getting off of 10%, which is astonishing. So if you can get into these companies, I think certainly for income and profitability in the short term for your portfolio, this morning has thrown up some great opportunities. But, you know, there's still a long way to go on this. So if you've got an income bias in your portfolio and you want to add to that, then I don't think you'll see many better opportunities than this to add to that, to top up. But I think most people have the, 80%, 85% of their portfolio is sort of based on income and based on longer term growth and compound growth. And 10 or 15% is allocated to the risky stuff. And my investment in Stobart's come out of that because I'm happy with the return I'm getting. I'm happy with the income return I'm getting. I'm happy with the capital growth and the opportunities that have been thrown up this morning. But at the more speculative end, I am prepared to take a punt because, if Stobart gets back on the road, excuse the pun, and returns to profit, then obviously DBay have got a great return because they've scaled in and they bought into the company at somewhere well below where the share price was prior to suspension, and there could be some decent upside there for people punting at this level. However, as you rightly say, there is a risk there because once a company of this size has accounting errors, if it faces a downturn as well, if it faces a hit on its trading, on trading and what coronavirus could conceivably do going forward, then there is a risk in that too. But I think if you're going to punt in this, going with your eyes open, but I certainly see value there, and I will remain holder. So,
I know. I just think I might be insane. Yeah, I don't understand why you'd go for this, Al. Honestly, I don't, because we talked about with us exactly the same argument with Thomas Cook, exactly the same argument.
But you see, first time round, when Thomas Cook, so we go back to 2013, Thomas Cook, Harriet Green came in.
I know that, but I'm just saying, we had the same argument recently with Thomas Cook before it went bankrupt, and I was saying the same things then, and I had the same sort of Twitter trolls having a go at me. And I just say, why bother even playing these? I mean, to me, it's a good way to throw away money. It's risk. Stocks and shares are risky enough as it is anyway. And so if you look at the known risks, you can avoid some of those. But you know the risks here are massive. And I just say, especially in a downturn in the economy, in haulage and all that will be the first to be hit. Lack of, you know, the reduced amount of logistics happening and people buying and selling, they'll be the first to be hit. And it's a competitive industry, low margins. They'll have problems keeping up their debt. And I just think, you know, if this, I just think, you know, in my head, you can avoid it. There's better opportunities out there. That's one thing. And I know the trolls who all own stock will be saying, no, you're not clear what you're talking about. Okay, well, fair enough then. You know, I had this argument with Thomas Cook. I did the same with Debenhams. The raft of companies gone through down a debt over the last several months, I made the same argument for. And, you know, the dominoes keep falling. Debt kills companies. And that's it. And I just think, why play with that? Why mess around with that? It's a distressed business, you know?
Okay. No, I hear you saying that's a very valid view. And I think it depends on your appetite for risk, as you say. And I'm, provided 85% of my portfolio is locked into income stocks and funds, then I am prepared to have a go with the rest. And, you know, that'll include small cap stocks such as i3 Energy. It'll include sort of Open Orphan. It'll include, you know, Bidstack and a raft of other penny stocks. But also within that, I'm prepared to take a punt. I mean, Thomas Cook, yeah, we go back to that. I had such a good run on that first time round, and I did do well financially from that, so I was prepared to back a second time round. Didn't work out, you know. I lost a few hundred quid, so you know, I'm not put that down to experience, but I'm in at the same level with Eddie Stobart, so I'm in with my eyes open, and you know, I'm prepared to sort of take a longer term view on this. So
I think there's experienced traders out there will jump in and out. I understand that. All I'm worried about is that quite a few people push this on Twitter, and I'm thinking if there are people out there who are new to investing or trading, I just want, because you will never get someone punting this on Twitter saying, be careful, they've got a lot of debt. Their debt is multiples of their actual valuation. No one will ever point out that risk. So it's down to the people themselves to do their own, you know, due diligence.
Yeah.
And like I said, this is a very risky company. Okay, so, Marv, anything else, Al?
I touched on i3 Energy there very, very briefly, and i3 Energy, as we know, was involved in North Sea drilling last year. There is some question over the company's ability to generate funding for the activities it's got scheduled for this year, but from being at highs of 34-35p, higher 40p, the shares are now trading at about 4.5-5p last time I looked. So, again, if you have a couple of hundred quid and you want to take a punt, I think this could be a really good recovery play, because if they go back and they drill the Serenity fields and they drill the Liberator field this year, and they secure a farming arrangement with a partner, then where the company valuation is now, it could offer tremendous upside opportunity. But please note, it is just a punt, because at the moment there is no confirmation that funding has been put in place. But once we get confirmation that their funding is in place, the shares could fly. But again, this is a company that's drilling. It's seeking a farming partner in its North Sea exploration activities, and there's been no confirmation that the funding is in yet. So that's one that I have a few hundred quid in. You know, it's just a backdraw job. But if that comes good, then it could be very lucrative.
You're becoming a punter, Al. You're kind of a dirty trader. You are. You know that.
Only 15% of my portfolio. the rest is in income stocks and funds, and there are some great funds as well that will be falling in the next week or so. Funds like Lindsay Train, funds like Fundsmith, Fidelity Global Technology Fund, Baillie Gifford Global Discovery. There's a whole raft of stuff out there that you know, if you're prepared to to scale back into the market, then those are some very big names that have a great track record. You just check out the performance of any one of those funds over the past 5 years, you'll see what I mean. So, you know, if you go in there, it's conceivable that you could double your money every sort of 4 to 5 years.
Mm-hmm. All the stuff. Al, thanks for that, and we'll speak you next week-y.
Thanks, Jos. Speak to you next week. Cheers, mate.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. And they are all pretty much top five, well, apart from one, oil plays. People trading the oil gapping down. And at five is Tullow Oil, down 25% at 17.38. At four, the only non-oil company is Open Orphan, and that is at 5.95. Of course, good contract today. At three, Royal Dutch Shell, down 14%. Wow, it's a big move for a big company at 13.72. At two, it's BP, down 20% at 3.15. Unbelievable. Number one, most followed companies, Premier Oil. They're down 51%. And that's, of course, due to their, I think, their sort of balance sheet and stuff, a bit more distress than the rest of them there. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Sirica Energy, Bruce Platform Restart. At four, Powerhouse Energy, Correction, Development Option Agreement with Peel. At three, Egdon Resources, East Humber Basin Update. At two, Open Orphan, Coronavirus Challenge Study Model. And number one, most liked RNS came from Live Company Group, Peter Rabbit themed Brick Live tour. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.